Welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 370. I'm Tom Cagley, your host, and in the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 370, we'll feature my discussion with Gregor Wikstrand. Gregor and I discussed his article titled, Should You Distrust Agile? And other topics. Gregor discussed why some people distrust Agile and whether you and your customers should also distrust Agile software development. After you listen to the podcast, read Gregor's blog on the topic. Link in the show notes. Gregor Wikstrand, PhD, MSc, is a TOGAF 9 certified enterprise architect with an interest in e-health and m-health and all things agile, as well as processes, methods, and tools. Gregor Wikstrand works as a CTO at Capgemini, where he alternates between enterprise advisory services, business development, and working with thought leadership. Are you ready to decide whether you trust Agile or not? It's time for the interview. Gregor Wikstrand, welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast. I ran across your work and have been reading for a little while. The other day, I ran across an article about distrust of Agile, and I know it's roughly about a year old at this point, but I had not seen it when you initially wrote it. A year later, is that still an issue? Do we still have an issue of distrust within the marketplace of Agile?
Agile has really become predominant, but I still hear people saying, I don't know, we should run this as a waterfall project, or Agile is not applicable here, or that's not work for me. And yes, so there is still an issue with not everyone being convinced about the value of Agile. I think it's on an adoption curve. We have people who have not adopted Agile yet. We have people who are in the middle of doing Agile. And we have some people who are in some way post-Agile.
Is the distrust a reflection of the fact that we're late in sort of that maturity curve, and that the folks that are distrusting it are just prone to that? Or is it because the marketplace is, when we talk about Agile, the word Agile can mean any number of things to any number of different people. Is it a definitional problem, or is it just where we are in the world?
I think there are many versions or reasons why people distrust Agile. I think one reason, for instance, is that you have done Agile, but you haven't done it well. And you think that Agile is whatever you were involved in, and you don't like it. It doesn't work for you. Another reason could be, as you mentioned, it could be a personality thing, that you feel that Agile does not give you control in the way you want to have control. It can be scary, because in Agile, we're saying that, well, we don't guarantee necessarily that all the functionality will be included in the next iteration. But we do guarantee that the quality and the timing will be kept. Another reason why people distrust Agile.
If people distrust Agile, especially because they distrust it because we're not guaranteeing them what they'll get in any specific iteration, but the quality, let's say, will be there. Is there a way that you would talk to somebody about that to allay that fear?
So Agile methods are based on increasing the transparency of the work being done by the software development team. As such, having more transparency, it is possible to build trust over time by showing that this is what we have agreed to do, this is what we're working on, this is what we're delivering, it is not exactly what we agreed, but we deliver this and this. So Agile is built as a way to increase trust. But I think that when, for instance, it is not applied correctly, or too over-optimistic scoping of an iteration happening many times over, causing people to think like, maybe this is inherent in Agile. I think also many people are of the conviction that because Agile has short iterations, it is some kind of fast and sloppy method of doing a project.
Is that a reflection of the developers then? Because if you're doing short iterations, you're delivering something that's demonstrable, hopefully potentially shippable, but at least demonstrable,
wouldn't that allay the problem with quality, or at least the perception that it's short and sloppy? Or are these people just so far away from it, they don't even get to see what's being delivered?
Yeah, that could be it. I think it's different in different cases. And I think that there are also developers who do agile wrong and they deliver too sloppy things. A problem can be also that the agile team is too far removed from the business, so that when you have these high level requirements like user stories and so on, you really need to have someone explain them to you. If you don't, you can get away, you can produce anything.
Right.
So it could also be that, you know, that they are not delivering what is expected because they didn't know what was expected.
So I think that almost goes back to your earlier observation that perhaps people are still doing agile wrong. If you're that far away from the business, or at least the people that understand the user stories, I think that doesn't that sort of fly in the face of, at least in Scrum, where you're supposed to have a product owner around?
Let me give you an interesting example. A customer that I have worked with, they needed a custom software system for managing some of their assets with very specific business rules for different types of assets and so on. And they started out a few years ago by collecting requirements, doing an RFP, and selecting someone who did it with one programmer in 3 months. And it ended up being completely useless to them. So then they decided to go with, to try again and do it in an agile manner. And it took 3 to 4 people, and it took a year. And after 6 months, they're starting to go like, but the previous one was only 3 months. Yes, but it didn't work for you because it only caught maybe 10 or 20% of your very specific business rules. So, would that customer in the future, you know, they could select to say that, well, it was wrong because it was agile, it made it too expensive.
And those examples, I think, are probably fairly typical. While agile might be currently the predominant development methodology, wouldn't that suggest that we're still looking for the silver bullet at this point? That if someone will come along and promise faster, better, cheaper, that those people who control the development processes within most organizations, don't you think they'll jump to that versus trying to figure out if it actually works?
Yes, of course. The less you know, the more prone you will be to oversimplification.
Is that why I don't know how old you are, but I can suggest that across my life through the IT world, we have always been looking for a silver bullet, whether it was Case or any of the other quote-unquote silver bullets. Everything is a silver bullet, and perhaps just that's just the way it gets sold.
Yes, I remember bubble memories in the 80s. That would solve everything by associative data processing, right?
Yeah.
4GL. We're still doing 4GL, but now no one thinks it will solve everything. I guess today we've been doing big data. It's moved to machine learning. It's we're doing cloud, and people are saying, cloud is kind of history. We should look to the fog. So we're always chasing silver bullets. But I think in terms of technology, there is much more development and improvements going on there. As compared to development methodology. I'm working on a piece for my blog on documentation in Agile. So I was searching for texts on self-documenting systems and so on. And I found lots of references from the 80s, 70s. You know, a hypertext system for software documentation was published in 1990, I think. Not a lot happens there. It takes much longer to improve our development methods than it takes to improve our technology.
Is that because there are people involved?
I took a course at the university on organizational psychology. Mm-hmm. And the professor there said that, well, you can try to change people to get better results, but you will find that you're up against billions of years of evolution. Not much chance to change people. You can try to change groups to get better results, and you will find you're up against millions of years of evolution. Or you can try to change organizations, and you will find that you're up against only hundreds of years of development. So in a sense, yes, we overestimate our ability to change people, and we're not focusing in the areas. But yes, it is partly because of people, but it's also partly because that we're working with a very, very, very complex matter. You know, a one or a zero in binary can be the whole difference between a system working and not working at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so small changes that can make such a big difference.
Going back to the beginning and your comment about Agile being predominant, then, you know, while we're fighting, whether it's millions, hundreds, either one of those would suggest that change, you know, changing people when they don't want, especially when they don't want to change, is going to be difficult. Despite all of the distrust of Agile, even today, why has it become so predominant if there's this massive amount of inertia and resistance to change? This is fast for most organizations.
Spiral development was, I guess, the first agile approach from the, that was in the 70s, right?
Then, yeah, BAME, yeah.
Then came rational unified process and similar processes, which in my opinion are quite agile, with short iterations, focus on deliverables, etc. And was that the late 80s, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
So fast? I'm not so sure that's very fast.
Okay.
What would fast be to you? And an interesting thing is, what is the alternative to agile? And many people claim that it is waterfall. But when you look at it in reality, people say, oh, we're doing waterfall and so on. And I very seldom see people doing waterfall. I see people doing cowboy coding quite often and calling it waterfall or agile. But people actually doing waterfall, that is not that common. So I think that because Agile provides a simple set of principles and practices that you can apply, because it provides visibility, it provides early deliverables, there are many good stories about it. And I think people generally get a good feeling about being involved in a project and not just watching it from a distance. I think all of those are good reasons why Agile has grown so rapidly.
I spent a number of years in the marketing world, and I would suggest the name Agile is part of its success factor. I would rather be Agile than whatever the alternative to a non-Agile is. You know, just the other side doesn't sound quite as good. I agree with you. I don't know necessarily that, you know, if those of us who look at practitioners, I would suggest that the opposite of Agile is predominantly ad hoc. And that most of what people do, even when they do, especially even when they do Agile poorly, is much closer to ad hoc. Whether you call it cowboy or anything else, it's not well disciplined.
I guess ad hoc is a more neutral word.
I actually heard someone describe cowboys as being very disciplined and very process oriented once, and that sort of stuck in my head. And so I've given them the benefit of the doubt. If the uptake has been, you know, whether it's been fast or just been steady, it's here. People do have generally good stories. There are bad stories that are floating. At what point does the distrust go away? At what point does that get pushed back into the background? And it's just the normal distrust of what's in essence a black box to most people, and that's software.
Yes. That's a good point. And I do think that the distrust is going away. And at least here in Sweden, we've seen several very expensive projects fail miserably when they were not run in agile mode. And the post-mortem done by what do you call them? auditors, business auditors, has been saying that, well, you had it was too much in one project. There were the deliverables were not often enough. You did not change the requirements, etc. So they're saying that, okay, this project failed because it did not apply this and this and this principle, which happens to be agile. So, but there is a very interesting paper that you will find referenced on my blog since a few weeks back. Magne Jørgensen is a researcher in Norway who does a lot of research on estimation, software development projects, and so on. And his most recent paper is about cognitive biases in software engineering. And specifically about confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is when everything you see, you interpret it as confirming your existing belief. So if you believe that, for instance, agile is good, then you will interpret everything to support agile. And if you believe that waterfall is good, then you will interpret the word to see support for that. So in the study, he references 10 or 20 studies showing how much we are software engineers controlled by our prejudice. And he also has done two new pieces of research. In one of them, he gives product descriptions to IT professionals and asks them, should this be fixed price or time and materials? And almost totally, people answer based on their stated preference. People who prefer fixed price see a fixed price product everywhere, and people who prefer time and material see time and material everywhere. And I think it's probably the same with agile. People who prefer agile see agile everywhere.
I could buy that. That's interesting. And I will definitely go and read that paper and point that out to the Software Process and Measurement Cast listeners. You also recently wrote about the conflict between, I guess, in essence, fast and quality. Mm. Is that part of the sort of the diatribe on agile, or is that just a common theme that has been going on in IT forever? We used to tell people, look, you know, whether it's faster, better, cheaper, pick one, maybe pick two, but you're not getting all three, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But that
is fundamentally wrong, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can be fast for a little while. But then what happens when you're fast is you build up technical debt and you end up in a situation where you have to spend 80, 90, 95, 100% of your budget on maintenance. I did an audit of a software system where the technical debt was 4 or 5 times higher than the investment that was already made.
Mm.
So there was no way they could recover from that situation. They basically had to scrap the system and start over.
How close to implementation were they? Or had they already rolled it in?
Let's not go into that.
Ouch. Ouch. Yeah, well, we probably all would recognize some of that. So if that's a false dichotomy, then, again, that's a message that has been commonplace in, at least in most IT organizations for 20, 30 years. How do you unwind that dichotomy?
Think about houses. So in second world and third world countries, people build a house with maybe less quality, using less quality materials, and then they decide to add a second floor, and they add a third floor, they add a fourth floor, they are up to the seventh floor, and the house collapses and everyone in it dies. This happens, you know, many times per year. And so they were skimping on quality in order to build fast. But how fast is it when you don't have a house anymore, right?
True.
And all the dead people inside the house as well.
Yeah, yeah, that does complicate things. Capers Jones, I worked for Capers early in my career, and he argued, and still argues, that quality is probably, you know, the top line, that's the thing that you need to take care of if you're ever going to, and in his case, he was arguing for productivity. So if you really want productivity, then you really have to take care of quality first.
Exactly. So with quality, you build productivity, and with productivity, you build speed. It's as simple as that.
again, a hard message. And then you get into the discussion of how do you define quality? How do you define technical debt? And but those are surmountable technical discussions, I would suggest.
It comes to time to fix, time to market, a number of known bugs, a number of times that your solution stops working, so on. So it's, I'm not sure it's really that complex.
Understood. Gregor, this has been a fantastic discussion. And when I read the article on trust, and it was an eye-opener, and I reached out to you, I wanted to have this kind of a conversation. Gregor, if you woke up tomorrow morning and somebody handed you a magic wand, a cup of coffee, and we won't discuss why you were getting a magic wand and a cup of coffee first thing in the morning, but you had the power to change any two things that affect software development, what would those two things be and why?
Oh, wow. That's a lot of power to get on one morning. Number one thing I would change is that in every software development activity, I would have a much closer collaboration between development team that includes testing and so-called business people, the people having the requirements and who are going to use the system, and the operations people who are going to make sure that it works after it has been developed. In some organizations, that you have to maintain the distinction for reasons of security and so on, but to the extent possible, there should be closer collaboration between all the people involved in the process.
Okay, it's one.
That's one, yeah. So I'll turn the wand and use the other side. And I think then that I would wish for people to have higher focus on quality and really avoiding building up technical debt, saving themselves, the users, other stakeholders, a lot of grief in the future by doing the right solution first instead of having to spend time to fix and fix and fix.
Your lips to God's ears. When people listen to this, I would assume that they'll want to continue the conversation. How would they find you on the web? How would they continue the conversation?
Yeah, so my blog is at gregorwikstrand.com. GregorWikstrand.com. And I'm very accessible on Twitter as well as Gregor Wikstrand, GregorWikstrand.
We'll have that contact information in the show notes. Gregor, as you well know, at this point, I open up the platform. This has been superb information. This is something that I think will keep people up at night thinking about because I think it's an important thought process to have. As a thank you, I open up the platform for you to promote anything that you'd like. So, Gregor, the platform is yours.
Of course, there are many things commercially or otherwise I could promote, but the main reason I'm spending time on the net and on social media is to connect with new people, new topics, and to learn something every day. So please reach out. You have my Twitter address. You have my blog address. Just reach out to me, respond to the blog, contact me on Twitter. I'm looking forward to it.
Gregor Wikstrand, thank you again for being on the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
Thank you very much.
Hey, FYI, we're really closing in on the end of our reread of The Mythical Man Month. If you're interested in picking the next book, go to the blog and vote. Currently, we have a nearly three-way tie between The Checklist Manifesto, How to Measure Anything, and Slack. All three of these books are neck and neck. Help us pick the next one. Go to the blog, or better yet, go to the show notes and click vote here, and vote on the next book in Reread Saturday. In the next Software Process and Measurement Cast, we will feature our article on focus and the Pomodoro Technique. A discussion on focus during this festive time of the year might be helpful for making sure you can get everything done that needs to be done. We also will include Steve Tendon discussing the next chapters in his book, Tame the Flow. Finally, we will anchor the cast with a visit to the QA Corner with Jeremy Berrio. Hey, a quick call to action. Please review the Software Process and Measurement Cast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcatcher or player, and then share the review. Help your friends find the Software Process and Measurement Cast. After all, friends help friends find great podcasts. In upcoming events, in the near future, I'm going to have details of conferences for 2016 that include the QAI Quest. I'm doing both a presentation and a workshop, and Star East, to name a few. All those details in a few weeks. The Software Process and Measurement Cast is a proud member of the Tech Podcasting Network. If it's tech, then it's on the Tech Podcasting Network. Check out the Software Process and Measurement Cast and other great podcasts on TPN, www.techpodcast.com. As many of you know, I do at least one webinar for the IT Metrics and Productivity Institute every year. I think this is a very valuable organization. The IT MPI's mission is to pull together the expertise and educational efforts of the world's leading IT thought leaders and to create a single online destination where IT practitioners and executives can meet all of their educational and professional development needs. Well, except for the Spamcast, of course. The IT MPI offers a premium membership that gives members unlimited free access to 400 PDU accredited webinar recordings and waives the PDU processing fees on all live and recorded webinars. The Software Process and Measurement Cast receives a fee if you sign up using the URL in the show notes. Definitely see it in the show notes. All revenues from our sponsor goes to bandwidth, hosting, and new cool equipment to create more and better content for you. Support the Spamcast and learn from the IT MPI. The Spamcast blog and show notes can be found at www.spamcast.net. Contact Spamcast at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Voice messages can be left at 1-206-888-6111. I also Twitter, and my Twitter ID is tcagley, so please track me down. It's my intent to share all voice messages, emails, Twitters. Your comments, questions, rants are appreciated and will help to facilitate a dialogue and build community. Let me know the topics that you would like to have covered and the people you'd like to get interviewed. Get involved. The music on Spamcast is made available by the PodSafe Music Network at www.podshow.com. The featured song is by 2012 and is titled Last Battle. Information on the band can be found at www.myspace.com/2012vision.com. 2012 does an incredible job with experimental electronica. Be sure to support 2012 and all PodSafe artists. Spamcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. If process improvement is a never-ending journey, why do so many people ask, when will we arrive? See you next week.